stewardship. Now, when you hear the word stewardship, what immediately comes to your mind?
Money.
Hang on to your wallet. Oh, I would not prefer to say that, Randy. We have visitors here. Let's break them in slow. That's a good comment about 10 to 11. So, yeah, money. Stewardship, money. I have a relative of mine that's a Seventh-day Adventist, but has not gone to church, per se, for many, many years. And every once in a while, they're very nice to mention to me, by the way, I heard from our church today or this week. And guess what the letter always has to say? Pardon? We miss you? We want to visit you? No, guess what it always says? We want your money. No other way of putting it. We have a local problem. We need money for the church school. We need money for this project. We need this. What a shame. What a shame. That when we hear the word stewardship, the first thing we think about is money. I believe in tithe paying. I do not think it's the end-all of all end-alls. So we're going to spend just a few minutes on tithe paying, but then we're going to spend the rest of the time on stewardship, of which I think is the most important part of stewardship. But I don't want to pass tithe paying. God has asked us to give back to Him 10% of what we have. Why?
Selfish, helps us to gain maybe a victory there in that area.
Okay.
To be giving. If he does it as a man, it doesn't help anything. But if he says, I would like for you to do this, then I think it can have a good effect.
Okay. All right. Yes, ma'am.
I think it is an acknowledgement on our part that everything belongs to Him. And we have what we have.
Okay, all right. Anybody else like to comment? Yes?
Where your money is, that's where your heart is.
Okay, that's absolutely true. Now I want you to listen to the question very carefully. Does God need our money?
No, okay. We need to give it.
Who said that?
I
do. Okay. Just checking.
Yes.
I just want to just check it here.
It's for our benefit.
Our benefit, okay.
What if we were to change money to my talents?
Don't get ahead. Don't get ahead. 5 minutes on this.
Ernie,
the rest of the time on talent. You're absolutely correct.
Well, no, I'm just going to say, you know what? Without our talents, we don't earn money.
Right. Okay.
And so really, when we talk about money, there really is, you can't separate those two.
Okay. All right. Does God need our money?
No.
All right. Well, we all agree with that. Does that people say the same thing in Killeen?
Yes.
Okay. Just checking. I'm a checker. Yes.
When God put Adam and Eve in the garden, He told them, take care of it. Be sure to give me your extra change. Care of what He had created. That's what stewardship is all about.
Okay, all right. I like that. Now, here's the next one. Questions get a little harder. Does the church need our money?
No. Yes.
No. Now, see how confusing? I hear it thinks it does. I hear no. And I hear yes. All right. Trent.
Well, I was just wondering if you're separating the conference from our church or if it's all the same thing.
I just ask questions. I don't answer questions. Yes.
There was if any of you have Glory Star and watch the Loma Linda service last night, they were talking about the old TV program, Tell the Truth.
Mm-hmm.
And just the whole sermon was on to tell the truth. Would the true church stand up? And it was on, what is the church? Is the church a body of people together? Is the church a physical structure? Or is the church where God lives in you? So you got to tell us, what is the church?
That's an interesting thought. Moving on. Hey, I just ask questions. I don't answer questions. Does it make any difference if the church, whatever we want to call it, and besides, that's an excellent question, whatever we want to call it, does it make any difference if it needs our money, what it does with our money, or if it has to have it to survive? Does that make a difference?
Yes.
I got a yes, I got a no. Okay, let's go with the no first. Well, let's go with the guy that raised his hand.
Several years ago, back in 77, 78, back in those years, there may be some in here that recall a church investment called Davenport.
Yeah, I believe so.
That
just missed making 60 minutes.
Did it?
Yeah, just missed.
Anyhow, there was a person, one of my students, that was very anti and was around trying to get everybody to not pay their tithe, not pay their offerings to the church because they were being misinvested, and came one plucked on my faculty, and I told him no. I says, the Bible says, return unto the Lord that which is His. We do that because that's what we're told to do. If the church is misinvesting the money for bad reasons, they're going to be held accountable for that in that day. Our accountability is what we believe God is telling us that we need to do, whether it's tithe, whether it's offerings, whatever it might be.
Okay, very good. Trent, did you have your hand up? Okay. How about if you're a church and you don't have a pastor? This happened in East Texas here a while back. And you don't have a pastor, so you decide to get the conference attention by how?
Withholding.
Not sending the tithe in.
Call the helpline 911.
Pardon? Good idea?
No. It probably got their attention.
Oh, it worked. It always works. Good idea. We're going to come back at the end with the answer to this question. When we hear the word stewardship, we automatically go to money. I think the best definition of stewardship is found in the 25th chapter of Matthew. And it's kind of interesting when you look at that chapter because there's three stories, instructions, parables that Jesus is giving to His disciples, and the very next few days He's going to go into Jerusalem and He's going to go through the Gethsemane experience and He's going to be crucified. So you would think that the last three parables that He gives in the way of instructions to His disciples would be of certain interest. Does that make sense? He has His last three instructions. First one is the parable of the 10 virgins, which we're all very familiar with. The third one, I think it's quite interesting, is the basis of judgment. And the basis of judgment, He says, when the king comes, He gathers all the people, those that are saved on the right, those that are not saved on the left. And His basis of judgment is very simple. How did you treat your fellow man? Not how many things you kept, not how much you paid, not how much you did, just how did you treat your fellow man. That was the last parable He gave His disciples before He left them. The one we're going to deal with today on stewardship is the in-between one. The story of three servants. Now I want to review with you the first two servants. It says there's a man who went far away to a different country. And he brought his servants together and he gave 1 5 talents. Now talents were not coins. These were metal things that were weighed. So this is not to do with talents we have or money. It was metal. So he gave one of them 5 talents. He gave a second servant 2 talents. And he gave the third servant 1 talent. Now, first of all, seems like to me, major problem to begin with. What's the obvious problem? Pardon?
Partiality.
Absolutely partiality. Where's the fairness in all of this?
The judge is the end of what he expected.
Okay, so he gave 1 5. Gave 1 2. Gave 1 1. And yes?
But it says here that he gave it to them according to their ability, not because he liked one better.
More partiality! Already judging. Let's see, I have a bunch of salesmen that work for me, so I'm going to say, because you're really good, your commission is $400, and because you're so-so, your commission is $300, and because you're just kind of bowing around, your commission's $100. How long would I get away with that? Not very long.
But if
yes.
You were an investor and you had 3 different investors and one has shown them to be a good investor, you would put them in charge of more money than you would them. So that is that partiality?
Ask me that question 20 years from now.
I think the situation is that you would expect 5 times more by giving the 5 2 times more with the 2 and the 1 times more. The expectation would be greater.
Okay. Man, now we're getting deeper and deeper in this theology, aren't we? So, God expects him to be a lot nicer and better and faithful than him.
No, I would think that if he had 5 times more money than him, the expectation of him doing 5 times more with his money would be there.
Okay. Yes.
Now we don't know the history involved with these 3 men. I mean, if you had a younger person, and 1 talent might be what that person needs to get the experience and that sort of thing. The other person might have the experience that they, and so they've already used the talents that they've had in the previously. And so it's just a building on what they've been given already.
Okay.
I think probably this established fact from the very beginning is that none of this is theirs. It's all masters.
It's not
giving them to say, oh, this is yours, do what you want with it.
Okay.
It's not theirs, it's his.
Yes.
As you read on through the story, though.
Well, let me get to the end. Give me time. That's fair.
It wasn't the amount of talents.
Yeah, let's wait till we get there. Let's wait till we get there. Are you one of these that gets a mystery book and reads the last page first? Just teasing.
Ernie,
yes.
Your salesman if they're getting a percentage of their sales, they probably are getting the difference in the amounts that you were saying.
Okay. Does God tempt you? If you want to use the word tempt, I don't want to go into that. Does God allow trials and tribulations to come to you that you cannot overcome?
No.
How do you know?
Oh,
I think there's days and years that you think that. And by the way, can I share something with you personally? Sometime during this week, go read the book of Habakkuk. Habakkuk starts out with God, paraphrasing, why are you allowing all of this mess to happen? I pray and you do nothing. Fair question. But then I would like for you to look at chapter 3, the last 4 to 5 verses, and hang on to what Habakkuk says after admitting, I'm tired, this is a mess, you're not fair. It's a beautiful dialogue between what you're going through and what God is going through with you. And then hang on to those last verses. God will... Yes?
Well, no, I'd like to just make a comment on what we're talking about.
Sure.
We are discussing this in our American culture. And the reality of it is, when you read the Bible, fairness does not exist. And I think that when you look at how Christ paid the workers, He paid the ones that came in last. And I think this has to do with our human nature.
Mm-hmm.
And saying, you know what? Why did you get 5 pounds? And I'm like, that's not the point. I'm grateful that God gave me one.
Okay,
and
absolutely.
I'm grateful that He gave me salvation. I may not have deserved it, and I may not have done anything to do that. But I think this is a principle of God's kingdom. That, you know what? I don't need to be looking at you.
Mm-hmm.
I need to be looking at, you know what? I'm just grateful I got one. Mm-hmm. I'm just grateful that I got one set of grace. Because you know what? That's what matters to me. Not that I got 5 measures of that. And
okay.
I think that for us to try to say, well, this was the equity. No, there's not equity.
No.
Let's do away with that because
yeah.
That's an American.
There is no equity. Do we agree that God will let no temptation come upon us that without His power we can overcome? That is a promise that we have to hold on to. Well, let's look at the flip side. Will God give you and bless you with talents that you are not able to bring back to Him and glorify Him? Will He overgive you? Absolutely not. He's not going to put burdens upon you that you cannot handle. He's not going to give you temptations, and He's not going to overbless you with, quote, talents or spiritual gifts that you are unable to take advantage of and to use for His glory. So therefore, when He came to His 3 servants, He had a relationship with the servants. And He said to the strongest, the best, I'm going to endow you with 5 talents because you are capable of handling 5 talents. And then He went to another and said, I'm going to give you 3 talents because you are capable. And then He went to the last one and said, I'm going to invest 1 talent with you. And then He leaves. He comes back. There's always a day of reckoning. And He calls His 3 servants together. And He says to the one that had 5, what have you done with them? And what was his answer? Pardon?
He invested it and had 5 more.
Okay, so he doubled it. Now, here to me is where stewardship fits in. What do you think this servant with 5 talents was his motivation?
Love
for his master.
Pleases his master.
Please, love, what else?
That's who he was.
Pardon?
That's who he was.
Absolutely.
Responsible.
Not particularly.
Responsible.
Not particularly. Responsibility. Is responsibility a... And you're both right, and I'm looking for a different change. Is responsibility a good word?
Dedicated.
It's not if you're me. Meal. Does responsibility, what does that make me want to do?
Head the other direction.
That's right. See? To me, a responsibility is something I have to do. I rebel against that. This was who he was. His motivation with those five talents that he entrusted was to go out and share what was within him that he had received from his master. He could do no other. Do you get the picture?
Do the little scorpion story, if you remember, that was so fitting to me to this particular topic.
Okay.
Maybe it breaks your thoughts.
Okay. No, it's... When you have nothing prepared, John, there's no breaking your thoughts. John likes this story. I like it too. There was a turtle and a scorpion. And they're on an island. And the floodwaters are coming up so high that it's going to swamp the island and they're going to die. So the scorpion says to the turtle, look, there's only one way out. I got to get on your back and we've got to swim for land or else we're going to die here. And the turtle says, can't do that. Scorpion says, why not? He says, because somewhere along the line, you're going to sting me and kill me. And the scorpion says, look, let's be rational. That's my life at stake, you idiot. Why would I do such a stupid thing like that? And finally the turtle says, well, that makes sense. So the scorpion gets on the back and they begin to paddle and to safety. And about halfway through, the scorpion reaches down and stings the turtle. And the turtle says, why? Why? Why did you do that? And the scorpion said, it's just my nature. What is within us is what we do. Jesus came and said, you want to see the basis of judgment? Whatever was within you is what came out when you saw somebody hungry. And the unrighteous said, well, Lord, if we would have known it was you, we would have fed you. And Jesus says, you missed the whole point. You see, the righteous, they fed the hungry. And they said, Master, when did we ever feed you? They didn't even know what they were doing. It was their nature. So God gave a servant five talents, and it was his nature to go out and share with everybody the richness of what his master had done for him. He could do no other. And then we have a servant that he gave three talents to. Not as much as the five talent, but it made no difference. It was the best that was within him, and he went out and could do no difference. Sue, don't do that anymore. Could do no difference. And he went and shared everything. Why? He loved. Do you see why I don't like responsibility? It was not due to responsibility. Yes, he was a responsible. Yes, he had a great work ethic. But it was the motivation for the love. He could do no other. Now, here's one that had one talent. And you see, when you meet the Lord, what's within you comes out. And let's see what the one talent man said. Mr. Reader, that's you.
This is Matthew 25, and this third individual starts with verse 24. And good, bad, or indifferent, this version uses dollars.
That's fine. Just looking for the principle.
Next, it was the turn of the one to whom he had given $1,000 to give his report. He said, "Sir, I knew that you would not expect me to do something with your money that I thought was unwise. So, rather than putting it where it could be misused, I decided to keep it in a safe place. And now I can give it back to you without a loss." When the owner heard this, he...
Okay, stop there. Go up before one verse, before it starts out with the thousand. What does it say?
In verse 23, he's speaking to the previous...
Okay, yeah, clear word. That's a good paraphrase. I don't like it. All right, on this particular verse. Who's got a different version? I need a different version. Yes?
The master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful."
Okay, move down to the next one.
The next one is what he was reading. The man who received the one talent came. "Master," he said, "I knew you were a hard man."
Oh, now we're getting to what I want. Now we're getting to what I want. Remember, what is inside of you comes out. Keep going. "Master, I know that you're a hard man." By the way, in the Greek, this word "hard" is the worst word that you can use in a relationship. He's saying, "You're hard, you're unfair, you're wanting things that are impossible." It's an absolute insult. Keep reading.
"Harvesting where you've not sown, gathering where you've not scattered seed. So I was afraid and I went out and I hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you."
Now, what's his relationship with his master?
Fear.
Didn't they even know him? He says, "I know that you reap where you don't even sow. I know that you're a hard man. I know that no matter what I do, I could never please you." Pardon? Pardon? Absolutely. And so he did what he thought was the only thing. When you can't please God, what do? You give up. What's the use? Who cares? And so he went and dug a hole, tried to get it in himself. He was too lazy to dig that deep of a hole, so he just planted the coin or the metal, covered it up, sat on it, and pouted. By the way, when Jesus gave this parable, who was the group of people that he was demonstrating that the one servant represented? Who said Pharisees? Absolutely correct. The Pharisees had taken the law of God, the principles of God, and they had drawn and put a square around it and kept it to themselves. How dare anybody ever get to share that? Because we are God's chosen people. Do you see a parallel? How dare anybody challenge what we know that is truth? And they took the most precious gifts that God can give a nation, that God can give a church, that God can give a person, the knowledge of Him, the knowledge of who He is, and they encompassed and kept it to themselves and buried it and did not want to share it with one person. because it's for us. So when the Master came, He said, what all people outside of a relationship with God say, my, you're hard. My, you're vindictive. My, you don't treat us right. I couldn't please you if I tried. And so I just took what you gave to me and sat on it. Boy, that's the danger. That's the lesson, in my estimation, that should be taught about stewardship. Is whatever God gives you, don't sit on it. And if you don't know Him, you're not going to like Him, you're not going to appreciate Him, and then when it comes along that you've got to give back 10% of what you get out there and earn, no wonder you don't want to pay it. Know Him. If you don't, none of this matters. You can pay double tithe, triple tithe, all you want to. I used to think, back in my younger days, that if you paid tithe, and even if it was kind of like you wrote out a check and you said, God, here it is, I hate paying it, that God would still bless you for the tithe paying. I've changed my mind over the years because I begin to realize who were the greatest tithe payers in the Bible. Who?
Pharisees.
Pharisees. And when Jesus came among them, what did they do to Him? They killed Him. So I soon decided that that theory was not correct. He come and He says, you're a hard man. I know you're not fair. I sat on it. What did Jesus then say to this poor person?
Take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For everyone who has been given more, for everyone who has will be given more, and he will have abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. And throw the worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
Okay. Wow. All right. Hard on him?
Wow.
Hard on him? Seems like it.
You know what we forget is there was a choice here.
Oh.
And every morning when I get up, I have a choice of what am I going to bring into my life? Okay. Am I going to bring gloom and doom, or am I going to bring God's kingdom of life?
Okay. What brings light into your life? Theologically speaking, what brings light into your life? Pardon? Relationship with Christ. What happens when you don't want that relationship? Is God going to say, I think you misunderstood me? You're going to have it whether you want it or not? No. He sadly says, I have no other choice than to let you go. And when that light is taken away, what is left?
Darkness.
You see, the picture isn't that God picked him up and walked him over and threw him out the door. The picture is God saying, as the man leaves, as he does in Hosea, there is nothing left I can do. And the man cast himself into the outer darkness by his choice. Yes.
I'm wondering if this verse goes in with this. I don't want to knock it off. But the verse that said, that God said, I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you. But He also says to give you an expected end. And what the man expected what each of the servants expected is what they got.
Mm-hmm.
So the man who said, I expected you to be hard and like this, got exactly that expectation.
That's right. God is not a forceful God. In Revelation, it's God who says, or Jesus says, behold, I come to your door and I knock. What's the option? Open it or ignore it. He doesn't kick the door down. Open it or ignore it. God will do everything in His power to take us home with Him. It's us that fighting. It's us. If we grow up in a legalistic situation, of which I've been there, then we view God in a total different view. Rules without relationship result in rebellion. That is a principle. I made that up until Sue told the Sabbath school class I saw it on a church sign in Harlingen. And then all of a sudden I remembered that was not one of my great inspirational thoughts. Did she get a talking to when we left? Yes, she did. Rules without relationship result in rebellion. And that's all this servant had. To him, a bunch of rules. To the other two, the rules did not matter. It was the relationship that motivated him. One of the greatest things that any church does is lay guilt on people for not using certain talents or gifts that they have. Back in the old days, they probably don't do as quite as much now, thank God, you were told that everybody should go out and give out literature. We were told that everybody should go out and give Bible studies. That everybody should do all of these things. We used to take a record of it. Remember, John? How many people help? Well, I remember as a teenager, I'd look for little old people to help them across the street. Why? Because I wanted to help them? No, I wanted to say one. That was my motivation. Dad, you look old. Can I help you across the street? What's wrong with you, he said. You see, I just wanted to say one. How many Bible studies? Well, what's the definition of a Bible study? You see, how many tracts of literature did you hand out? We all don't have the same gifts. We all don't have the same talents. God has not given us the burden to be everything to everybody. Let me tell you, there are people who should never attempt to give a Bible study. Never. Then there are people such as me that should never be in the business of compassion. I'm not a compassionate person. I realized that a long time ago. Doesn't mean I don't care. It means that I do not have the spiritual gift of compassion. But I don't feel guilty about that. There's people in here that do. God has given each of us what we can use and what we can bear. Whether it's stewardship of our time, it's stewardship of our health, it's stewardship of who we know, or if it's the stewardship of money. We like the money one. Do you know why? Because that one we can measure. So I've sat on church boards when they'd say, I think brother so-and-so would make a fine deacon. And do you know what often the first question that came up was? Is he a nice guy? Does he help the sick? Does he pray a lot? Is he a tithe payer? Oh, yeah, that was the one. Why?
Measure.
We can measure it. It's only one motivation to pay tithe. It's not for a church office. It's not to help a church. It's not to help a denomination. It's between you and God. And what a pleasure it is to write out a check for your tithe, because you know you're where you're at because God has blessed and put you there. That's it. You see, in my estimation, stewardship should work hard to bring people to Christ. And then offerings and tithe will take care of themselves. God will not give you more gifts than you're capable of handling. But He gives you the light from His love into your life to go share. And as you share that, as Rob likes to use, it comes out of you like a river flowing from your belly. And as that comes out, what more do you need? You need something coming in. And that relationship gets stronger and stronger and stronger, and you're sharing more and more and more. To me, that's stewardship. Father in heaven, how gracious you are. Sometimes we look at your parables and things that in the Bible, and if we don't look at the whole picture, it does seem harsh. But at the end, you're always appealing. You're always pointing out. You're always caring. And Father, it's us that make the decisions that carry the responsibility of what we do. Help us to know You better. Help us through knowing You that stewardship becomes just part of our life in all aspects. Give us a good day today is our prayer. And I think of this poor family that are going through the problems with their children. How their hearts must ache. Be close to them. Help us that we can be of support to them. You are the answer. In Jesus' name, amen.